Okay, now, I think many of you understand that this program has certainly been in the forefront of trying to bring awareness of a disease, a disorder, a syndrome to the world that is ignored by medical science, that is shunned by most dermatologists, mocked by many medical doctors. But here, after eight special programs on Morgellons disease, eight special programs with some of the most amazing, heart-rending stories you have ever heard, we know that this is a real issue, and it is now beginning to be recognized by medical doctors, psychiatrists, and dermatologists. It's been a struggle. So far, our vaunted FDA has done nothing more than appoint a task force to investigate it. That's all we can get out of them. Let me read just a little bit from a letter here that is very interesting. It was published in Psychiatric News, June the 1st of this very year, written by Dr. Robert C. Bransfield, M.D. He says, I am pleased to see that in December 15th, 2006 issue of Psychiatric News, attention was drawn to Morgellons disease, and that the excellent article there gave sound advice on communicating with delusional parasitosis patients. Yeah, you heard me right. Delusional parasitosis patients. However, I would like to add comments about the distinction between Morgellons disease and delusional parasitosis. I've evaluated and treated Morgellons patients, spoken with researchers and other clinicians who work with these patients, read the limited literature on the subject, and reviewed a database of 3,000 Morgellons patients. The Morgellons patients I have seen had surprisingly similar symptoms, with an abrupt onset, often following a toxic exposure of some kind. Before the onset of their illness, these patients' mental status appeared to be quite representative of the general population, and some, including physicians, were high-functioning professionals. The condition appears more common in nurses, teachers, and in family members of the same household, which, of course, suggests a contagious component. After the onset or beginning of the illness, these patients report surprisingly similar symptoms. They have a combination of bizarre dermatological symptoms, cognitive impairments, mood disturbances, and sometimes paranoia, and suicide attempts in later stages of the illness itself. Now, their symptoms are not compatible with schizophrenia, bipolar illness, substance abuse, or any other recognized causes of delusions. When patients complain of fibers protruding from their skin, examination with a low-power digital microscope can visualize and photograph the presence or the absence of such fibers. In addition, many Morgellons patients test positive for Lyme disease. The mental symptoms seen in Morgellons are similar to those of other chronic general medical illnesses with psychiatric manifestations, since the mental symptoms fluctuate in a pattern similar to that of the general medical symptoms, and this suggests that the mental symptoms are probably associated with some immunological and or toxic effects upon the brain of the Morgellons victim. When these patients are treated with modest courses of antibiotics, their dermatological and psychiatric symptoms often show significant improvement. Without a thorough assessment, however, Morgellons patients are commonly given a diagnosis of delusional parasitosis, resulting in a delay in proper treatment. Whatever Morgellons is, it is something very different and very unique and should be considered as a condition needing further study and possibly listed in the next edition of DSM. In summary, Morgellons disease and delusional parasitosis are two distinct clinical entities. Morgellons does not appear to be an imaginary or delusional illness and merits the research effort that we see with any other emerging and serious illness. So said Dr. Robert C. Bransfield, M.D., his opinion of the letter in Psychiatric News, June 1st of this year. With that, let's go right away down to Mexico and bring back to the program a man who has been with us many, many times during our eight specials. In fact, every one of them he's been involved with. His name is Cliff Mickelson. Cliff, welcome to the program again.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here and to be able to visit with you once again.
Encouraging to see mainstream medicine come up with what I just read and at least have it in the literature.
Absolutely encouraging. And we're seeing more and more of this kind of stuff begin to surface. I believe that we're creating a groundswell, and programs like yours and just the general effort of activists in this disease are creating groundswell that's beginning to make an effect.
How long have you had Morgellons, Cliff?
I'm going on 9 years now.
Mm-hmm. We talked during our last special program, which was very touching, frankly, and it was emotionally very, very moving. It was our eighth special program. We talked about the emotional and psychological effects of Morgellons and what it does to people. That program is a landmark. Nothing else has really addressed it to the extent that we did. I cannot overemphasize enough to everyone with this issue that they need to be aware that this is a multifaceted invasion of their body. Whether you accept the idea that it is a nanotechnology device or something else that we don't know where the heck it came from, it doesn't really matter. When you have Morgellons, you have a problem, and it needs to be addressed with the utmost seriousness. Cliff, is there anything in a general sense that you can add right now to our last program that we missed about the psychiatric, the mental, the emotional issues of Morgellons? You did make one point that was very interesting, and you said quite clearly that people who have, and you were definite about this, negative personality tendencies or attributes often suffer an increase, a magnification, if you will, of those negative traits.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Very, very few people that I've talked to with this disease have reported anything else. If you have negative personality traits, be they minor, be they major, for some unknown reason, this particular affliction does magnify those particular proclivities.
And Cliff, if you're normal to begin with, what happens to you?
Well, of course, we all have our own little quirks and negative traits, you know, just things that you just don't do right or you don't want to do. And so when you're normal, it will magnify those things and bring them out.
Whatever they may be.
Yes, whatever they may be. You know, just you may not like doing dishes, and somebody with Morgellons will have a stack of dishes a mile high by the time.
I see.
You know, things like that.
So we do know, without question now, that Morgellons, these fibers, whatever they are, get into the brain. They get probably into all the major body organs. They get into the neurological system of the body, the muscular skeletal system of the body. They penetrate everywhere, and then ultimately they emerge from the skin. At least that's the tendency I get from people I talk to. Is that fairly accurate?
Yes, it would be fairly accurate. However, I'm not sure that they really penetrate into the brain. I think we've got what is more going on with the brain is more of a toxin transfer.
I see. All right, well, that makes sense. In any case, it does have a profound impact in many cases on people who, I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to since meeting you and Jan Smith and others who have had this problem and whose lives have been turned inside out.
One of the things that I would like to recommend to all listeners is they go back and listen to Program 8, the one that you mentioned a few minutes ago, and they'll get a feel for what this disease really does to a person's life. We had just a marvelous show last time, Jeff, and it's one of the best shows I've ever been involved in, and it really would give the listener, those of you out there who haven't heard that show, an understanding of what it really means to be a victim of Morgellons.
We have, Cliff, an ebbing and flowing, a waning and a waxing, if you will, of the fibers in the skin with people. Sometimes they tend to recede and go away, at least from the skin, but they don't really go away from the body. And your feeling remains that they do simply retreat further within the body, and that, as we know from Jan Smith's knee replacements, they certainly have found a home in the joints of people. If nothing else, we know that much.
Yes, we do know that. They're also inside the intestinal tract, the alimentary tract, all the way through the body, in the pulmonary tract. You'll find them in the nasal sinus areas, in the ears. I mean, basically all over the place.
What is your status after 9 years, Cliff? How are you doing, my friend? And you don't have to tell me. It's none of my business. But if you want to share it, I'm here.
I don't mind sharing at all. I feel that I'm somewhat stabilized due to a personal regimen that I've developed myself. However, it's really like walking up a sand dune, Jeff. You know, one week you feel like, you know, maybe I'm doing okay, I'm stable, I'm maintaining. And then the next week you're down and you're going, man, I'm never going to whip this. But a lot of it is attitude, and you've just got to be positive.
With respect to online cures now. There have been several people who have been trying to market things that allegedly will take care of Morgellons, but the bottom line is there is nothing we know right now that will stop it, correct?
Absolutely. And I would caution anyone that would think otherwise to be very, very careful when they get involved in some of these online offers.
As you watch the media as much as you're able to, do you see, and we'll take a break and come back and answer this, a willingness of the media to cover this, or is there a reticence of it because it's not formally recognized by the AMA? What's your read?
We're seeing more and more acceptance, and it's a slow uphill fight, but we're beginning to make progress.
Okay, very good. Stand by, Cliff. We'll be right back in just a couple minutes as we continue. Cliff Mickelson, Morgellons patient, if you will, for 9 years now, and has been a monumentally important contributor to public awareness on this program and others. We'll be back. Okay, welcome back. I think the biggest concern that many people have, and justifiably so, is that Morgellons appears to be contagious. It appears to be communicable, and it appears to be spreading throughout the general population at a very alarming rate. Cliff Mickelson, how does it look to you?
It's very scary out there, Jeff. I have never seen such a rapid increase in this particular affliction as I have in the last year. More and more reports are pouring in daily. We see doctors that do work with this particular affliction saying that they can't keep up with the patient load. My good friend and associate Cindy Casey out in San Francisco reports that the people she works with have seen just a six-fold increase in weekly new cases. It seems to just suddenly be just going through the roof.
It's not a question of people just finally coming forward with something that they've been battling for years. These appear to be new cases?
A little bit of both, but the majority of them are new cases. A lot of people for a long time weren't aware that they had Morgellons because it's such an odd disease. Mm-hmm. And so more and more people are becoming aware through educational programs on the Internet and things like that and media. But nonetheless, there's just new cases cropping up left and right all around the world.
One of the more bizarre aspects of it is that the Morgellons lesions on the skin do not become infected with bacteria. That's bizarre.
That's very bizarre and extremely intriguing.
The other side of the coin on that one is that the lesions do not develop normal scabs either. They just sit there and kind of ooze for a long time.
And the ooze turns into a, when it contacts air, it turns into an incredibly hard material. No one's quite been able to get an analysis of it yet, but it's something to see. And it manages to hook itself into the skin with a series of almost fishhook-like appendages underneath. It's just something from the Twilight Zone.
Do we know of any effort by the government to really get down and look at this beside appointing that alleged task force? It's my closet view, Cliff Mickelson, that the government, at least some parts of it, already knows exactly what this is, and they're dragging their feet with great intent.
Well, Jeff, I wish I could say that I disagreed with you, but you know, you are 100% correct, in my opinion. The government somewhere, somehow, somebody in the loop knows what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a more concentrated effort to ignore, debunk.
It's obscene is what it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's beyond contempt.
They won't touch it. They know what it is. Whether it comes from this planet or another planet is almost irrelevant. We've seen families destroyed. We've seen relationships destroyed. We've seen people's lives and careers destroyed with this thing. And it is still being pushed into the shadows, but not for much longer. It can't. There are just too many people. And I wish I could project the number of people who are becoming infected, how easily it is transmitted. And yet some people who live around Morgellons victims don't get it.
Isn't that interesting?
It's utterly fascinating.
I suspect there's a genetic component involved. I wouldn't be surprised if this was some grand Tuskegee-type experiment.
Not so grand, but yes, I understand. I just have a minute or so left, and I guess what you're doing is dealing with it as best you can, like you always do. Do you still get lesions, Cliff, or at this stage, after 9 years, do you not get many lesions?
I don't get as many lesions as I used to, but I credit a lot of that to the regimen and the protocol that I follow personally. Mm-hmm. I'm by no means cured, and I'm certainly, but I believe I've been able to stabilize myself to a point. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with the attitude that I try to keep on the positive side.
You have been incredibly upbeat about this, incredibly optimistic, and your efforts and Jan Smith, who I always mention Jan, to share their suffering, and it is suffering. I mean, this is the kind of thing that has driven people to suicide, literally. We don't know how many, but more than a handful, apparently.
Yes, it has. And one little piece of advice that I could give to people, and I think has been worked in my favor, Jeff, has been that I've always been very healthy, and I've always tried to take care of myself. I've done a lot of physical exercise over the years, mm-hmm. and I've just maintained a positive attitude. Those things will help you at least maintain a decent quality of life while you struggle with this disease.
Do you find that diet, Cliff, makes a difference whether you stop meat, stop dairy, or do anything? Have you been able to quantify anything with a dietary change?
I believe that sugar, and a lot of sugar is fuels this thing.
Well, it sure as hell knocks the immune system out. We know that.
Yes, and anything that knocks the immune system down is going to open you up for a full-blown attack.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Some of the worst cases are found among people who have completely destroyed their immune system, drug addicts, people like that, people who have had heavy courses of medicines that knock down the immune system. They've become walking Morgellons cases instantly.
The fiber is still coming out of your body?
Yes, I still get those.
Colors?
Oh, yes.
all the usual suspects?
All the usual suspects, the little devils. I line them up every day and interrogate them.
Are you still getting facial lesions at all?
Yes, yes. One thing that's kind of interesting out there in listener land, people that have this may want to know this. If you keep a regimen of trying to keep the lesions clean and working at them, not necessarily, I'm not saying picking at them, but just keeping them clean, working at them, mm-hmm. It will help, and eventually they will subside. However, they never truly go away. They'll actually move on you. It's kind of creepy.
That's my understanding. You pick at them, and they go to another location, and then they grow for a while, then they pop up.
Yes, it's just the darndest thing you ever saw.
Yeah. You're being too kind with your verbiage, but I'll accept it. Thank you, my friend, for being here from Mexico, and we'll look forward to our next conversation, Cliff. Thanks very much.
You're welcome, Jeff. Take care.
Good night.
Good night.
Cliff Mickelson, 9 years with Morgellons from Mexico. And we're going to pause now and come back and meet a young woman scientist who has been working on this and really carrying the torch. She's an amazing lady, been on the program many times, Dr. Hildegard Stanninger, PhD. We'll talk to her next. Okay, we are back for our second half hour on our Morgellons update tonight with Dr. Hildegard Stanninger, PhD. Dr. Hilde, as she is known to everybody, has been literally carrying a huge load on this effort to try to bring Morgellons to the forefront of not only the scientific community, but the medical community as well, and the news media. And welcome back to the program, Hilde.
Thank you very much, and thank you, audience.
Well, you're welcome, and they're happy you're back here. We just talked to Cliff Mickelson in Mexico for a half an hour, mm-hmm. and he made a point that I don't know if you are on the same page with him or not, but he said his associates are reporting now a tremendous upsurge in the number of people reporting to doctors and clinics who have, obviously, Morgellons. Do you know? Are you coming across that in your work?
Right. There is a lot more coming because of the programs and listening to other programs that are out there mm-hmm. and other, not necessarily colleagues, but information that people have on it now, that they're recognizing that they may have it.
And the symptoms most commonly that are being promoted and brought forward are what?
Lesions, fibers coming out
uh-huh.
of their skin.
The hallmark things, in other words.
The standard situations, and if they have black lights or anything, then they can see fluorescence on them, like Dr. Spencer and I have seen here at the Morian.
Okay, now that's important. For those of you who think you may have Morgellons, get yourself a little black light. If you get a black light and hold it over your skin, what are they going to see, Hildy?
Well, they're going to see different patterns, okay? By patterns is they hold the black light and they will see on their face, on their forehead, over their nose, like the bridge of their nose,
right,
and up above their forehead, like going from the nose bridge up, it goes like a V, they will see a fluorescence, just like a, I'm going to say, two funnels put on top of each other,
really?
Or like an hourglass. Yes.
Okay, so this is bizarre. Now, this is commonly observed, an hourglass-shaped fluorescence?
Yes, we've seen it in every one of our patients that we have come here. With
okay, run that by me again. I'm going to put my finger on the top of the bridge of my nose. Now, from there up to my hairline,
right,
you're
and
seeing...
make it like a V. Make
okay.
it like a V.
Straight
going
up
out
a V.
From the bridge.
Okay, all right, I got it. And then the hourglass,
the
where's the bottom of the V? That's the top.
The scalp.
Okay.
And then the other part of the hourglass, which
uh-huh.
would be the bottom part,
uh-huh.
would be from the bridge of the nose going over the nose into the cheek.
Wow. Now, that's
and
very
it, and
strange.
It like stops over the upper lip.
Gotcha.
You
all
know,
right.
but it makes that hourglass shape.
And this fluorescing, are we thinking that the fluorescing of the skin is coming from under the skin as it is caught?
No,
is
it's
it
under
ca-
the skin. It's
is
under
it
the
caused
skin.
By the fibers? That's my question.
It could be, or an accumulation of whatever nanoparticle that has fluorescence or whatever is going on. But that standard, uh-huh. that is a like a pale yellow color or yellow fluorescence.
Got it.
Versus what we have seen is we have seen on people's chin where they've had a lesion or some activity of a fiber or that, a direct circle, but bright yellow fluorescence
huh.
versus I've had patients that had fluorescent hot pink hearts on their legs all in a row versus
hearts?
Other ones that have had
heart-shaped,
meaning it's you know, it's just like you would draw a heart.
Hot
but
pink heart-shaped fluorescence on the legs?
That was on their leg, and then it was on their scalp, you know, on their scalp.
Wow.
Okay? Versus another patient, which was male, he had fluorescent orange neon, like hippie flowers, on his feet going up his legs.
Who's going to believe this, Hildy?
Well, the thing is that these are things that we've seen in our office,
yeah.
Dr. Spencer and I. And
I understand. I believe
and
it, of course.
We took pictures
but,
of it. We
yeah,
documented
right.
and put it in the file. But at the same time, now we have had other people that, and I don't want to harp on fluorescence, but it's where they have had distinct patterns. By patterns, if I took a pin and made a circle out of it, you know, a dot circle.
Understand.
And then put a line in it like it was making it like there was, you know, like a null sign.
Okay.
Turn around. Those were we found on people's elbows. We found V's, like in Victor, and under like the arms, wherever there was joints.
This disease gets stranger and stranger all the time.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, with any of this fluorescence, that means mm-hmm. that there is some kind of compound or something in their body that is making a pattern. There
but
was
what,
a lot of nanotechnology right. for nano fluorescent tattoos, you know, which are similar to the hearts or the those flowers, versus the other individuals had direct pinpoint, which was, I thought, very odd. It was like behind their elbows, at their arms, or that it was exactly where there was mm-hmm. a joint.
Do the fibers themselves fluoresce? Do they fluoresce?
I did not see that.
Okay.
No, I mean, they had distinct color on them.
Understand. I've mm-hmm. seen them, too, colored. Yeah, they're colored. The
mm-hmm.
primary colors are what? White, blue, red. What else do we have?
Yellow.
Green. And
green.
I've seen the green.
Yeah.
Not on myself. I've seen them on other people.
Anyway.
This disease or affliction or syndrome, whatever we want to call it, has all the hallmarks of something that, unfortunately, could have been made right here on this planet, correct?
Correct.
Okay. There's a description of Morgellons disease that you and I and Shoshana Allison got together and wrote, and I'll read that in just a couple minutes. We have a break to go through here, but I want to read that and get you to comment on it as well. So far, the feds are doing nothing but sitting on their thumbs. They have appointed what they call a task force, which means nothing. And even Cliff Mickelson agrees that when I suggest to him that there is an element within the government at some level that knows exactly what this Morgellons is all about. Would you agree with that, Hildy?
I would agree.
Okay. All right. For all of you who are interested in this further or think you may have it, I would invite you to please go to Rents.com, look on the left-hand side of the homepage, and look at our extensive Morgellons feature section. We have photographs, tons of pictures and images that will help you understand what we're talking about. We have papers, we have articles, we have even video showing Morgellons fibers moving. They are animated. So they are not only self-assembling and self-replicating, but they are animated. This is something from another planet? No, it's something most probably from this planet that got loose in the public or was intentionally released into the public, or a combination of both. We don't know. Be right back with Dr. Hildegard Stanninger, Ph.D., in just a couple minutes. Okay, we're back talking with Dr. Hildegard Stanninger, Ph.D. Let me read this Morgellons disease defined for you, and I'll give all of you a little bit of a, I think, a broader understanding of this, and then we'll get Hildy to comment on it. A communicable nanotechnology invasion of human tissues in the form of self-assembling, self-replicating nanotubes, nanowires, nanoarrays with sensors, and other nanoconfigurations, some carrying genetically altered and spliced DNA, RNA. These nanomachines thrive in extreme alkaline pH conditions and use the body's bioelectric energy and other unidentified as yet elements for power. By the way, people should not strive for an acidic pH. They should work for a normal pH of 7.5. There is some evidence that these tiny machines possess their own internal batteries. They are also believed to be able to receive specific tuned microwave EMF and ELF signals and information. To what end is not known. The symptoms vary from open skin lesions from which colored or plain fibers emerge, which do not scab normally, heal extremely slowly, and never become bacterially infected. They also extend to brain fog, fatigue, and depression. It is also established that Morgellons nanomachines are commonly found in all body fluids, orifices, and often even hair follicles, and are believed to routinely achieve total body systemic penetration. It is reported by nearly all afflicted that Morgellons nanomachines seem to have some kind of hive or group intelligence. Communicability appears to be possible, probable, through shedding of the fibers by the infected and through all normal bacterial or viral vectors. Some fibers have been shown to withstand temperatures in excess. I'm going to read this again because it's so important. Some Morgellons colored fibers have been shown to withstand temperatures in excess of 1,400 degrees Fahrenheit. Therefore, routine sterilization for Morgellons nanomachines is all but impossible. Any reusable medical, dental, medical equipment and instruments are not technically sterilizable anymore. There is also strong evidence linking chemtrail aerosol fibers to Morgellons fibers, although proof of transmission through aerial spraying remains anecdotal at best at this time. Hildy, anything to add to that?
That's a lot that's there. It's what we've also found is that in the beginning where it stated communicable, and it may be communicable as being that the person that may get it may have been exposed to different compounds, like petroleum compounds, where these nanoarrays like to self-replicate.
Got it.
So it, by whatever contamination you may have in your body, it may appear as it's communicable because it's growing on it because it has a source to as building blocks to make whatever it's supposed to be designed
it,
to
it
make
makes,
in you.
Right. It is able to make itself in the image of its instructions or whatever it's designed mm-hmm. to do.
That's correct. And it's designed to do something.
Do we have any guesses yet?
No. So far, it looks like it's designed to integrate into the body And for the individuals where they're experiencing the lesions and the fibers coming out, it's where maybe it didn't integrate into the body correctly.
Say that again, Hildy, and explain, please.
In other words, if it was designed to integrate into the body, some individuals that have lesions or fibers that are coming out of their body, mm-hmm. it may be that it didn't integrate into the body correctly.
So they may
whatever
be...
whatever it was designed, which might be because, one, say the individual might have had heavy metal poisoning mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. mercury poisoning or, you know, from fish or whatever. But the thing is that because, as it was stated in that definition, it has like a battery approach because we identified in some of the analysis that it had transitional elements that make batteries right. within cell structures, mm-hmm. that these other heavy metals can screw up the valence charge of those other compounds, thus not make it work properly.
So some of the extruding fibers may be failed fibers, maybe fibers that didn't do what they were supposed to,
correct,
and they've worked their way out of the body, or the body's
right,
expelling them.
And at the same time, these fibers continually grow and replicate,
mm-hmm.
that it's growing and replicating within tissue or externally outside of membranes of tissue. That's very, very painful.
Very scary, too.
Yes, very scary. And what we have found is that it still initiates, as I call it, from the glitter stage that goes into the body, and it initiates from the intestinal tract or in the mm-hmm. kidney area just below the adrenal gland.
The program we did, number 8, the psychological emotional ramifications mm-hmm. of being afflicted with Morgellons, was really poignant and touching in many ways. This is probably, maybe in some ways, the most difficult aspect of Morgellons as we see it now to treat and to address, because people feel tainted, they are confused. We do know that there's brain fog. We do know that there are other mental impairments that are present in many, if not all, the people who have it. And what are you as a PhD trying to do, or what can you do to try to give guidelines for people who are being afflicted mentally with this, and
okay.
they don't even know it?
Yes, and mentally meaning like when they have the brain fog, basically
correct.
It may be where the phospholipids that are associated with the neurotissue is being stripped off because of the compounds that are being used or made
or,
to replicate.
Or released?
Yeah,
or
released. In this area.
Uh-huh.
It's an accumulation. At the same time, when we identified where we had basically a two-part polyester in as a fiber, which means like if I took a large boba straw and stuck a regular straw in it, it's mm-hmm. like a straw within a straw, and then
right.
having like a Tootsie Roll pop at the end, which was silicone.
Uh-huh.
Any two-part polyester, which is like nylon,
mm-hmm.
if it's mm-hmm. melting or deteriorating in your body, mm-hmm. It's going to make you sick.
Okay. All right.
You know, what I'm trying to say is the compounds that it's making these fibers into,
uh-huh.
which are very similar to fiber optic materials and
right.
high-density,
right.
You know, materials that way for replication, that they're toxic. They've been known to be toxic with OSHA at specific quantities. At the same time, it's where everyone thinks that, oh, it's a small amount, it's going to be not harmful. But the smaller the amount allows it to get into the cell or encrust the membrane around it so that it can't breathe.
Are we seeing cell death then in some cases from this?
Well, it's like this. If you have between your cells, you have fresh water, okay? And if that fresh water is using, you know, hydrogen and oxygen, but we have a compound like the silicones that we found that act like a reverse hydrophilic reaction,
mm-hmm.
that means
mm-hmm.
that they're using that to self polymerize in that area.
Okay.
And at the same time, it's making like glue.
Got it.
A silicone glue.
Understand.
That's if it's totally coated, instead
mm-hmm.
of having water,
mm-hmm.
I'm having silicone that's where a lot of these individuals feel like they're suffocating, because literally it is, feels like it's suffocating, because it is.
Are we seeing any decided turns toward morbidity or mortality with these things, or are they getting to a point where they nail the patient, they take charge of the patient or the victim, and they continue to parasitize the person, and there's some kind of a stasis that is achieved, a standoff at some point, or are we seeing a long, slow decline, like Cliff's had it for 9 years, Jan Smith has had it for 10 years? What are we seeing, Hilda?
I see, you know, individuals like that that has had it a long time. I do know that individuals that have come seen me personally here, or Dr. Spencer, mm-hmm. that the more that they do in radiant heat, or they even different soaps that will allow that gel to melt and come out of their pores,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
anything that allows them to heal within outward, they have better responses, meaning they're starting to get their radiance back. They're starting to look alive,
right.
versus not having a glow about their cells or their body.
Right, understand. There is also associated with this affliction, this syndrome, a tremendous period of fatigue that often hits people. Hits them like a sledgehammer, and they're out.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard that many times. Are you finding that to continue now?
Yes, and I would look at it as two parts. One is the compound. Any of the patients that we have seen or talked to,
mm-hmm.
when they do a sediment test or any of the tests to test for immune response, they never tested positive for an infection or anything like that. But what happens is, if you have a breakdown of compound in your body,
right.
which these materials
right.
are made out of, they outgas carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide, thus
oh, really?
Depleting the oxygen in your body and to become sleepy.
So that's a contributor in terms of fatigue, but there are other things involved as well. There's a metabolic,
there's
a metabolic fatigue that strikes people. And I've had people on this program and talked to them on email that they just say they're white. It's almost like chronic fatigue. And I suspect
mm-hmm.
that some chronic fatigue is, in fact, Morgellons.
Correct. And it could be. It could be.
Yeah.
And for any of the carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide, they will have a lot of yawning.
Understand. Hilde, thank you again for being here.
You're welcome.
I just think you're an incredible asset to humankind. You're just carrying this thing forward at sometimes personal risk, I know, and we're here to help you, as you know, at any time.
I appreciate that. I would like to make a little announcement.
Very quick.
There's been some companies that have contacted me. Two Row Wampum, which is owned by the Mohawk Indians in Ganawaki, which is outside of Montreal.
10 seconds.
Biodetect and ITIP. They're looking at combining their knowledge and their staff to help come up with a cure for this. So
okay, great.
That'll
all
be
right.
very good.
We'll follow
okay.
that. Thank you,
okay.
Dr. Hilde. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Dr. Hildegard Staniger, PhD, we're going to pause and we shall continue.